Like it or not, politics and the grains have kind of blended together a little bit. And we're going to talk about what that all means this afternoon. You're listening to the American Ag Network, and good afternoon. I'm Susan Littlefield. Mike Zuzulo joins us. Mike, of course, with Global Commodity Analytics. And, you know, it seems like in any sort of conversation that you read and comments on these markets lately, politics of what's tariffs or others, E15, you name it, it all seems to be kind of weighing in to the way the markets are reacting.
Yeah, and I think we're in that messy historical time period in the trade and tariff policy market coming together in that. Susan, we're seeing it, especially on Monday, is a great example. We can have a specific trade foreign policy here in the United States, but so do our trading partners and our trading adversaries. And that was made abundantly clear on Monday when the Argentine government said, we are so short on U.S. dollars and we have so high of an inflation, what can we do to drive dollars into our economy and reduce our inflation without doing something official to our exchange rate? Ah, I know what we'll do. We'll create a temporary grain tax suspension again through the month of October, or until their exports, mainly soy, but also grains, but especially soy, hit $7 billion, and then we'll shut it off. And that is the easiest way and most effective way for Argentina to come in and grab a hold of an extra $7 billion and get their farmers to get probably 10, 15, maybe 20% more than what they normally would because of the prices going so much higher after that announcement, their domestic prices. And what I'm trying to get at here is every time we see something like this, now that we are in the middle of the 25-26 marketing year, I think the market realized after the U.S.-China trade negotiations last week broke up without any specifics or details that every month that goes on is another 9 to 9.5 million metric tons of soybeans that we either in the United States get or we don't get in terms of exports, because USDA has them at 112 million metric tons for the 25-26 marketing year of soybean imports. So you're talking about 9.3 million tons each and every month. And I think what we saw Monday was a clear reaction in the futures market to what has already been seen, we've already been seeing in the cash market, of really sour basis levels in the soybeans because of our lack of demand from China. And so this is where I like what the policy of the United States is trying to do, in that we are trying to get other countries to move in the right direction without threatening military action. And we're trying to rebuild our middle class. We're trying to rebuild the center part of the country. You and I grew up during that time period. We both saw major multinational companies come in, or foreign countries come in and take away major industries. In my case, it was a glass factory that I worked at in West Central Ohio. That's kind of where we're at right now. And it really does point to the idea that we've got some problems that we're going to have to work through, and these markets are really adapt to it now.
Well, and what I find interesting too on all of this, Mike, is how fast. I mean, it did not take more than a blink of an eye for China to say, okay, we'll buy beans from you through November.
That is the heart and soul of it all, is that the groundwork was laid before President Trump's second term, that the New East, as I call them, Brazil, Russia, India, China, with India on the fence, Turkey is another country, part of NATO, but I'd say they're on the fence. These countries have been working together for the better part of a decade, both in terms of developing their own trade and in terms of a group and an alliance, and they align up nicely politically because they're not really democracies. They're very authoritarian or have very strong leadership and a very weak legislation or legislative branch and a very weak Supreme Court or a judicial branch. And so to come in and buy at least 10 cargoes, that's the word, at least 10 cargoes purchased by China from Argentina, gets Argentina close already to that $7 billion U.S. dollars of demand that they're needing to infuse into their economy and into their currency markets because they're running short on U.S. dollars. And so you can see, I've always told clients and subscribers that I try and bridge the macro with the micro. I try and bridge what's going on in these outside markets like currencies and trade with supply-demand fundamentals. And this is what we're talking about here. And so net-net, as we close out the trade on Tuesday, we really saw the wheat and the corn try and shine and offset the negativity in the soybeans. Why? I think it goes back to Monday's export inspections being so strong for both of those commodities. And Russia's wheat prices are not going down as they harvest. They're still around $230 a ton. We're still competitive out there, and the weekly export inspections on Monday showed that.
Well, that kind of leads into the next thought is we also saw comments that there's some Midwest politicians, I would sure love to know who they are, that have been meeting privately with China, you know, to get some sort of workings going. So it seems like there's some pressure that's come from the ag sector to the politicians and now into the country.
Yes, and I think this is only going to frustrate and disrupt what historically happens when it comes to tariffs and sanctions and things like that. There are a lot of work that has been done in the last 50 years, especially in the 70s and 80s, that I've gone back and read through and looked at by a lot smarter people than me that have said, if you're talking about putting sanctions on a democratic country, that can work. If you're talking about putting sanctions on an authoritarian country, it rarely works. One of the reasons it rarely works is because of exactly what you're talking about. No one can continue to hold the line. Someone is always going to try and get a better deal and not stick with the group. And I'm not saying that's what's happening here, but it seems like the possibility is there.
So let's look at the livestock side of the trade action, because, you know, you and I have had these conversations about the New World screwworm and how it was going to have a market effect, not only from a grain, but a cattle perspective. It's 70 miles from the border. The ag secretary makes comments on Sunday night, and we saw that knee-jerk reaction and limit up trade on those feeders yesterday.
Yes, and it also came on the heels of a very low placements number, which I was hoping we would see. I just could not see how we could have slaughter, year-to-date slaughter, down 7% as of last week, and the trade saying we're only going to be down less than 1% in terms of on feed as of September 1. And I'm hoping this trend grows, that these lower slaughter numbers start to be reflected in the cattle on feed numbers as we go through October, November, and December, because that's seasonally when we start to see the inventory numbers build. I think the retention may be there. I think the market sees that now. All of a sudden, between the placements number and the screwworm issue, we have a monthly feeder chart that is now showing a positive price action. And our old high from August, our old all-time high from August in feeders of 366.42, is being taken at this point, taken out with the high of 367.70 as the September gets ready to go off the board at the end of this week. And a hogs and pigs report comes in on Thursday. And I think the rule of thumb I continue to use, Susan, on the cattle is like 2014, when we made an October high, it's really difficult for the market to go higher unless the bull is fed. The screwworm issue, I think, did have the power to feed the feeder bull, which was needed because it was starting to weaken the most, the feeder cattle was. And I think the reason that that market is found so much support off the screwworm news is because you said it exactly right. At the beginning of this week, all of a sudden, we have a 70-mile screwworm case from 70 miles from our border. It was just at the end of the week, the Mexican Ag Department was saying, we're doing so well, we're doing so well. Look, USDA should be ready to open the border up fairly soon. And it left me wondering, could that be true? Well, now we have a different side of the story.
So normally we start to see this pullback in this cattle complex about this point. And I know that we're still continuing. We have our down days, we have our up days, but fall is setting in. Do we see that pullback still coming on the horizon?
Yeah, I really do from a cyclical standpoint. I mean, as I said, this new news has fed the bull. We don't know how much yet, but what I'm going to tell and what I told clients and subscribers late last week, even before this news was out, was let's see if we can't go up and test those little highs and feeders, drag the fats up with them. The cash market's still underpinning us. And then let's get some floors underneath us for Q4, because Q4, I think, is going to be pretty rough when it comes to demand and consumption. I honestly think that's why the hogs have been able to rally so much on Tuesday, even though the ham cutout is the lowest since this past July in terms of its price action. I think the market and hogs are starting to understand we're going to see probably some significant protein substitution. There may be a little bit of fear that we're not going to see much more than 100% of the hogs versus last year at this time as well, because of disease pressure that we had earlier in this year. But yeah, I think it's still very smart to get floors underneath you in some way, shape, or form heading into the fourth quarter if we do go up and test and challenge and take out these old highs from July and August.
Well, I tell you, Mike, I can't wait for our in-depth conversation that you and I will have tomorrow during the Market Talk segment. Appreciate your thoughts today. It's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics. And a quick reminder that commodity futures and options do involve a substantial risk of loss, not suitable to all investors. And that is the Tuesday Market Wrap-Up on the American Ag Network.